she's 40 loving dickheads, dreaming about a premiership cup. We love our clubs, but they never win two flags in 100 years. That shit house, if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched, we're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
It is a Wednesday, the 22nd of September. Welcome to Two Guys, One Cup, an AFL-adjacent podcast. My name is Will Anderson.
And my name is Charlie Clawson. And let me just say that 2 weeks is too long to wait for a grand final. I mean, look, I've been enjoying consuming a bit of football media, but like you, there's just not enough around. And I've been listening to stuff that I would not ordinarily listen to because I'm like, oh, something needs to fill the gap. There's too much padding going on right now. Some of it I've liked, a lot of it I haven't.
No, here's what I would say. There's been not enough padding. There's plenty of space to pad, and there's been a distinct lack of padding. Like, as somebody who's wanted to consume every bit of football media that I possibly could. Like, I mean, I know more about Cody Waitman's dad than I know about members of my own extended family. Like, I've listened to interviews with players. I've seen Josh Bruce helping deliver merchandise in at the office. Wasn't I listened to an interview with Josh Bruce. Like, I am, like, fully in for whatever there is. There is not enough.
Are you doing both sides of the aisle? Are you dipping in into any Melbourne stuff?
It's all Melbourne stuff. Oh, my fucking God. Like, here's what I am going to enjoy if we manage to fucking get up and win on Saturday, is spending the entire week after the grand final going back, re-listening to each and every one of those fucking podcasts and writing a list of all the people who've said the Bulldogs can't win the fucking grand final, and then spending the next 6 months contacting them individually and personally.
If I was a Melbourne supporter, I'd be getting very nervous because I know what you're saying.
Everyone thinks that Melbourne is going to win. I've never, if you had not seen this season and you only consumed football media, you would think this is the most lopsided grand final in fucking history. I have been amazed at the, like, even if people go, hey, the Bulldogs have got a chance because of this, eventually they all pick Melbourne as their tip.
Yeah. I mean, I don't feel it's been as, I think maybe you're a bit sensitive, Will. I don't think what I've listened to hasn't been that lopsided.
But no, I'm not saying the commentary has been lopsided. I'm saying just if you did a tally of here's everyone's tips. Yeah. If you printed them in the paper, it'd be like 80 people on one side and it'd be like three on the other side.
It feels like everyone, the byline seems to be, I think Melbourne are going to win, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Dogs could get up. And so to me, if I was a Melbourne
But what's your tip? Melbourne. That's what every one of those conversations. They'll talk for 45 minutes about how the Bulldogs can win. And then they'll be like, what's your tip? And they're like, Melbourne.
Yeah.
And you know what we love at Bevo's Bottom Boys? People writing us off. You're playing into our hands.
That's exactly what I was thinking today, because I think you're 100% right. Like, a lot of that talk around, I mean, it's interesting. I've been listening to a lot of, The Age has been doing these. They've been going back and reading excerpts from, what's that, the Bulldogs?
Flanagan's book. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah. What's it called? A Glimpse in Time or A Wink to the Stars?
A wink to
heaven or something like that. A nod in time saves a wink in nine or something like that. And then they alternate that with like Melbourne interviews. So
that book, by the way. I was interviewed for that book. I believe that I am actually in that book. I have not featured in any of the recreations they're doing on the Age Footy podcast.
But it's working because it's getting me more invested. I actually thought that I really wouldn't, I wasn't that engaged with this grand final, but it's working getting all that backstory. Like the Easton Wood story, I had no idea about. I'm like, he seems like a fascinating young man. Like the way he didn't want to, he didn't think he was going to play football because he didn't like the way, the junior coaches told him you have to be aggressive and it's all going to be about win. He just wanted to fly for marks and stuff. And then, when he met Bevo, Bevo's like, I don't want you to play like that. I want you to play like you. And Bevo cried like after their first like close victory. And like Easton Wood was like, oh my God, like you can cry at a football club. And I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, what a backstory. The fact that, like, you know, growing up on the farm and they went rabbit shooting and he shot a rabbit and then he went to his mum and said, I'm not doing that again. And, you know, he's always stuck to his values and then playing in the grand final with a busted ankle. I'm like, this is fucking amazing. Like, but then I heard Max Gorn getting interviewed. Max Gorn, like, having two knee reconstructions and, you know, people writing him off. And I'm like, oh, I want Max Gorn to win. It's like, it's totally working. Like, it's getting me very excited.
Here's something about Max Gorn that I found amazing to learn.
He's very tall.
I don't think you will have heard this, so I'm happy to share this bit of information with you. But apparently, back in the day, he used to enjoy a cigarette on the way to training.
Oh, I hadn't heard that. No.
They've kept that a secret.
Did you know that Scott Pendlebury has a background in basketball?
I did not know that. Wow.
So it's good stuff, but you're right. The Bulldogs have been written off, and if I was a Melbourne supporter, I'd be like, stop saying we should win this. Stop trotting out, like, you know, all these Melbourne legends and what an emotional day it's going to be. And I feel like
I was listening. I could not believe I was listening to some. So they did this thing on SEM where they had Mike Sheehan in and they went through the history of the Norm Smith curse. And I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds good. That's 25 minutes of my day. So I had. They had a legend on who was talking about the fact that when Max kicked out the goal in the final round and everyone celebrated, the Norm Smith curse had been lifted. And I was like, mate.
Don't go the early cry.
Don't say that out loud this week.
What about Mike Sheen saying, oh, I caught up with Simon Goodwin at the Portsea pub at the start of the year and he looked around and said, we could win this thing. It's like, what the fuck are you saying, you idiots? Shut up.
No, not we could win this thing. The way that I've heard that story be told is that Mike Sheen was kind of – like, you know, actually making fun of Simon Goodwin. And he actually said, oh, no, we're going to win the whole thing.
If we don't get any injuries, we could win the whole thing. Yeah. But don't say that, Mike. As a Melbourne supporter, you shouldn't be saying that. That's
a great story, Mike, to tell next week.
So has your... because you were, for lack of a better word, effusive last week. You were riding high in an amazing victory. And then I've noticed a little shift, you know, in the other podcasts we do, that you're looking a bit nervous now. Things are, like, the joy has dried up a little bit. It's getting near go time. How are you feeling days out from this grand final?
No, I'm feeling pretty good, actually. Like, okay. I am. I'm pretty calm.
All right.
No, yeah, surprisingly calm. I think part of it is that I'm obviously not allowed to go. It's going to be a very different experience to 2016. I mean, that moment I shared with 100,000 other people in a very public way, whereas this I will be sitting alone in my house, like, you know, watching it sort of by myself. So it's going to be a very different experience. But no, I've loved it. I it's just been so rewarding. Like, there's such a great group of young men to find out about. And the more that I find out about them, the more that I am impressed by them. And every single one of them tells you a story about Bevo that gives you a better idea about Bevo. And I've said this before. I said it when Bob was captain and Bevo came in. But for me, I've barracked for the Bulldogs all my life. But the Bulldogs were always, they had a character that isn't necessarily my defining character. You know, the things that they valued as being super important just weren't reflective necessarily of me and who I was. But Bevo's Bulldogs, these boys, these young men, and the sort of story they have and the mission they have and the way they play with, you know, empathy and crying and telling people, no, I want you to be the best version of you. The famous story from 2016 where he's like, you've all just got to play your instruments, you know, like, and you've just got to work out what you're...
I don't mean masturbate. Jake Stringer, get out of there.
And we don't do that until after the game, remember? We turn the lights off, we play that song, and we all masturbate. Yeah, it's not got out. It'll be fine. Go, bottom boys. But yeah, I've loved it. It's been great to have the time to, you know, see all these stories unfold. So no, regardless of what happens on the weekend, I've absolutely enjoyed. And because of what happened in 2016, I have been able to enjoy it. Like, I am not care. I mean, absolutely, I would love them to win. And I think they, like, you know, if they play their best, they can win. But, you know, I do understand from every football podcast I've listened to that we are going in as underdogs, Charlie.
Which I think is such a great position to be in. And it, even from the reporting I've heard over in Perth, most of the kind of like public support is for the Demons as well. It's mainly red and blue. And that kind of doesn't surprise me because, you know, Perth, it's a fairly wealthy, aristocratic kind of like city. I think that blue bloods respect blue bloods. But wouldn't it be great if the fucking scrappy little dogs from the west of Melbourne, the west of the east, came over and just upset the party?
I mean, I would enjoy it. Yeah. I'd be a rat.
I think there'd be portions of like, I think, you know, Freo fans would enjoy it. I think anyone who sort of identifies as like, you know, the little brother, you know, I was going to say Port Adelaide might enjoy it. Port Adelaide would probably hate it.
Well, they are the Bulldogs though. Like, I mean, now they've got Bob Murphy, they've got Simon Garlick, they've got Matthew Boyd. So I think if you're Fremantle or if you're a Fremantle fan, yeah, you don't want Melbourne or the West Coast version. So if you're a Fremantle fan, be on the Bulldogs though.
Yeah, I think you should be. Other news this week, Will. Carlton finally, their search for a coach has ended. Clarko, very ominously, I thought, said, look, no, definitely not going to coach next year, but a year out max, and then I'm back. And I'm just like, oh man, like that must just, I think if you're like Michael Voss, who's just signed the contract, and then Clarko goes on 360 max that announcement, you're like, well, fucking hell, are they going to try and knife me in a year's time to get Clarko? Or are you looking at the coaches who potentially, like Stewie Jew's got to be nervous about that? Apparently, they've extended Stewie Jew for another year, but that feels like, you know, he's probably on a knife's edge. Maybe Ken Hinckley, if the anger doesn't subside over the next 12 months, if Port Adelaide have a middling year next year, then, you know, you could see him going there. What do you think is more likely to happen? Would you rather be Michael Voss, or would you rather be one of the other coaches in this situation?
I think there would be very few coaches in the entire league who would want to have a bad season if Clarko's available. That's the truth. Like, there'd be some who you wouldn't swap for Clarko. Like, I mean, obviously Simon Goodwin, like Luke Beveridge. I think Dimmer. I think Chris Fagan, unless it was some sort of transitional, you know, sort of thing. I don't know. Like, after that, like, there's almost... Like, I mean, Adam Simpson is a great coach and, like, you know, has a contract. But, like, if you had another bad season and Clarko was available, like, would West Coast look at Clarko?
Well, that's the other thing, is I also feel like maybe it's got to be a club that can afford him. Like, a West Coast could afford Clarko, Carlton, Collingwood, any of the big clubs. North, GWS, you know, GWS, Gold Coast, St Kilda, we can't really afford Clarko, I don't think. I mean, we'd love to get
what
a Clarko.
What if they chipped
I don't
think
in? We can afford him.
Like, what if a couple of the bottom clubs
rattle
said,
some
like,
tins? Well, he coaches part-time each club.
That's what I was saying. So, like, maybe, like, St Kilda and Gold Coast have, like, a Clarko arrangement where it's, like, every second weekend.
I mean, I think depending on who your coach is, would it be better to have Clarko every second week? Like, so assistants 1 week and then Clarko every second week? Or would you rather stick with, like, Stewie Jew?
No, I love the. I think every second week would be the right amount of Clarko.
So you hang on to your current senior coach.
Yeah.
So Stewie Jew stays, but Clarko just comes in every second week.
Every second week.
Stuff up.
He's like a consultant, like an AFL like consultant. Ruse. In fact, you know what? Yeah, it'd be great if you could just hire like a coach, just like, you know, a specialist coach for like, you know, however, like period of time. But he's a freelancer. So like Clarko could do a month with the Tigers, but he could also then go and do a month with the Saints.
Now, Will, it is the last regular Two Guys World Cup of the year. We will be doing our post-grand final show. Tickets still on sale. There'll be a link in the episode description. And I imagine that my club or a summer version of Two Guys One Cup will be coming at some stage. I haven't quite decided what I'm going to do with that, but I get the feeling there will be an off-season version of Two Guys One Cup, whether or not that's both of us, whether or not it's me and someone else, whether or not it's you and someone else, haven't decided yet. But seeing as this is the last regular Two Guys, One Cup, I thought we should revisit an old favourite one more time with this article about a twerp. The headline is, Harden Up, Corns Hits Back at the Sensitive Power After Scathing Criticism. How have you seen the twerp's year? How have you rated him?
I mean, vital part of the game. I mean, particularly when Robbo, yeah, we lost Robbo for a considerable part of the season. I think the twerp really stepped up to fill like a gaping hole in the Australian football media hot take landscape. So no, I'm like, I think we need a twerp, and I think the twerp is pretty good at being a twerp.
Okay. So this is from Fox Sports, Ben Cotton. Port Adelaide champion Kane Corn says his former club needs to harden up over his criticism towards them after last week's preliminary final loss to the Western Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Corn labelled the Powers...
Remember when he said that Ollie Wines had no weapons?
Corn's... Oh, we should talk about Ollie Wines. We'll get to that in a sec. Corn's labelled the Powers' performance an embarrassment and said it buried several players. And the club reportedly took exception to his assessment, with veteran journalist Caroline Wilson revealing on 5A Radio that there was a level of disappointment that two of its former greats, Corns and Warren Tredray, were the biggest critics after the horror defeat. Now, that seems a bit weird, right? That just because they played for your club and now they work in the media, they should treat you a little better. Like, I've heard Nick Revolt be pretty scathing about the Saints, Nick Del Santa, Joey Montagna. I don't feel like, I feel like if anything, players tend to go a bit harder at the, you know, Brad Johnson's probably the same. They go a bit harder at the club they used to play for because they don't want to be showing, looking like they're showing some kind of bias.
I mean, Brad Johnson is probably a bad example. He's never gone hard on anybody in the entire world. He'd find some really nice things to say about Hitler after, you know, a match. But yeah, I know what you mean.
Wilson said there was a view at Port Adelaide that you, Kane, and Warren were stronger than anyone else in the Adelaide media. Given your time at the club, when it challenged to win flags and took a few years to get there and then lost finals they should have won, you, of all people, should have understood. Even Kane, I wonder if there's an element for you with your relationship with Ken Hinckley. When you quit mid-season to go work at another club, the club felt they wrapped their arms around you and supported you. Perhaps there's a small amount from your point of view that should be more supportive of them. All right. So that's what Caro's put to Kane. What do you think Kane's going to come back with?
Just before we move off Warren Tredray, he's gone like full anti-mask, anti-lockdown.
Oh, has he?
Lockdown. Yeah, he's full on into that world. So
great.
So a couple of real prime quality twerps. One a professional media twerp and one an actual online twerp.
Corns, a 2004 premiership player, admitted it can be tough to critique the Power, but didn't back down from his criticism.
No.
It is an interesting role when you come into the media, and it's the most challenging part of doing it is how you comment on your former club, a club that you love. But, and there was always going to be a but, for a club that sees itself as the most ruthless club in the competition, that their mission is, we exist to win championships, can you imagine former coach Foz Williams being sensitive to a couple of media comments in the back of what I believe is their second most embarrassing performance in Files history? I love it.
I mean, I see you and I raise you. He's come out hot, hasn't he? He's just like, oh, no. I am not apologetic or repentant in any way.
Corns then highlighted how Port Adelaide's football boss, Chris Davies, described the club's prelim final efforts as an abomination. Kane said, nothing I said was stronger than abomination. You don't get any stronger than that, he said. Me showing clips of Port Adelaide players shirking contests in the first quarter of a final that was set up to win should not affect Ken Hinckley. And if it is, Ken, I'm not sure. And if it is Ken, I'm not sure that he's sensitive to these comments. I think he's got to harden up a little bit. He's got to drink a nice tall glass of concrete and harden the fuck up. And that's editorializing for me. Because no one has said more nice things about Ken Hinckley in the last 9 years than myself. I've been incredibly supportive.
Untrue.
I don't think that's true.
Absolutely no way that would be true.
Yeah. Brett Johnson. I feel for the supporters who booked their tickets and spent thousands of dollars to come over. Everything is set up for them. If the club is sensitive about some commentary from two former players who have a job to do, then I think they need to harden up a little bit.
I love how he brought in the supporters, though, like as if he was speaking on behalf of the supporters rather than just on behalf of himself and his media career.
Last week we analysed the teams that did not make the eight. There's now six more teams to look at. So we'll start with the first of these teams. And what was the rating system? It's a Jared wait and see for next year, or a give them a good caning. Yeah. So that is our grading system. So let's look.
I mean, it doesn't really work as well once we get into the final eight, because wait and see was like okay when it was the bottom eight, but now it feels like that's understating it, right?
What do you mean? That like they've already proven themselves?
Well, don't you think so? Like, you know, like is there a higher rating than Gerald Wait and See? I guess what I'm saying is for the final eight, yeah. Probably need like a twerp. Like we need a Gerald Wait and See, and we maybe need something that is like above that.
Okay. Who's another journalist then that we could, there's a Caro. It's like, well, I guess with about the wait and see, I think about the finals is like, I guess it's relative to what the expectation of the team is. Like okay. Brisbane, you know, or like, I mean, I think like the, no, sorry. I think the Bombers, who are the first team, would be a Gerard wait and see, because it's like, oh, they exceeded expectations, but they lost that first final. But I think there's a lot to be excited about with what's going on there. So that's a wait and see. I think the grading still applies.
Okay. All right. You've talked me around.
Okay. So Essendon.
For me, it's a Gerald wait and see. For the reasons you just outlined.
11 wins, 11 losses. They won 3 of their last 5 games. But as we know, lost to the Bulldogs in the first final. Yeah, a lot to like, I think. It's amazing. I think when we go back to our preseason predictions, we both had Essendon like way outside the final eight. And they just lost Joe Danaher. They just lost Saad. It was kind of hard to see where their improvement was going to come from. Turns out Darcy Parrish is a pretty good footballer.
The package finally delivered, to quote a BTism. So Jake Stringer was amazing. And I just thought all over the ground, like that sort of next generation of their like deep midfield, like some, you know, really impressive young players. Like, you know, they really seem to have picked up a lot of, you know, players you can see playing for them for the next 10 years. So I think there's a lot of upside for Essendon for sure. And, you know, who knows about the book? They were with us until halftime and then it started raining. And this is a team, the Bulldogs, that have now proved that they could go to Brisbane and beat Brisbane and go to Port Adelaide and beat Port Adelaide. So maybe that puts Essendon's performance in some context as well.
Still haven't won a final in 17 years.
I mean, there is that. There is a slightly large elephant in the room.
The next team is the GWS Giants. 11 wins, 10 losses, 1 draw. Pretty good percentage. Let's get out of here. They won 4 of their last 5 games. Another team I wrote off in the preseason. I thought that Lee and Cameron's days were numbers. The big question mark, I guess, around them is what do you do with Steve Cornelio? 2 really average seasons. He's the captain, just not playing anywhere near his best. He's been injured. Do you take the captaincy off him and give it to Toby Green and just try and let him find some form? Do you hope that another club would be willing to take him and pay out the last 5 years of his 7-year contract? That's the big question.
On paper, it's pretty tough. Like for a guy who was, you know, signed to this incredibly long-term contract because he was a gun player, you know, he was obviously a leader off the field, you know, he was recognized for that. And then on the field, he was recognized with the captaincy very young. And then it's been absolutely nothing for a disaster. Like both, you know, I guess in a captaincy sense, at least on the field, and then his own performance on the field. It's been really tough. I would have thought the toughest thing is if they went to him and said, we're going to take the captaincy off you. And he went, who are you going to give it to? And they went, you know, the dude who hit
literally
the umpire.
literally.
You know, the
else.
Guy who kicked another player in the head and bumped an umpire? Yeah, we reckon he'll be a better captain. Like, it's on paper, it's pretty rough. I would have thought if you're Cornelio,
yeah,
the best thing you could do as a leader is walk into the club and say, I want to concentrate on my football next year. And I think the best way forward for myself and for the club and for me to contribute to this club is I will be a leader on the field, you know, and absolutely still contributing in that sense. But I think it's probably best for me and for you guys at the moment that, you know, we have another leader. And I think if he did that, people would respect the shit out of that. And I think that's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, they'd say, we want you to concentrate on your footy as well. And you'll be doing that in Fremantle.
It's fucking nice there. Like, they don't wear masks. Everyone's out and about. The grand final's over there now. It's fine.
You'll be hanging out with Bob Murphy and, you know, doing...
Yeah, Bob Murphy's over there, mate. You get over there. Bob Murphy's over there.
Giants, the best thing about the Giants year, I reckon, is A, I mean, I wrote them off with a lot of people. And I think we saw a new side to the Giants. Like, they're forever, they've been the Ferrari, you know, they've been the kind of like the school prefects, they've been the Cobra Kai. And they had their first proper year of adversity where fucking injuries and, you know, losing close games, losing to like the Suns, like all this kind of shit that they kind of compressed what St Kilda's done over 140 years multiple times, and they had it all in one season. Yeah, and I think they got
themselves some history. They did a crash course in getting themselves some history.
Yeah, they really did. And because they started at such an exalted point, being like, you know, the love child of the AFL and given all these riches. And it's like, I mean, have you seen the movie Overboard with Goldie Hawn? Where she's just like this rich bitch, and then, like, you know, she falls off a boat and bumps her head, and Kurt Russell and his blue collar family are like to take her in. And I mean, now that I think about it, it's kind of a creepy film. Like, they gaslight the shit out of her.
You know what I would love though is if, you know, because every team has a theme, if they revealed in another documentary that Leon Cameron's theme had been the Goldie Hawn movie Overboard.
But I feel like in the same way Goldie Hawn learnt the qualities, the good qualities of blue-collar life, that's what happened with GWS. They learnt to fight and scrap and dig in and rely on their teammates. It was very, dare I say, Bevo's bottom boys-ish, what they did this year, the way they kind of got in that bubble, us against the world, fuck everyone. And it was different to how they used to, because they used to do that, but it was more this arrogant, we're just fucking king shit, you know, try and keep up. But this was more like, nah, man, we will do whatever it takes to win. And I like it. I think it was really, really cool. I was kind of hoping there was going to be some inverse 2016 poetry where the Bulldogs became like, you know, like it was the Karate Kid TV series. All of a sudden, Ralph Macchio is the bad guy. And then you got the the Giants coming up and having to kind of like work from nothing to get to the grand final. But I was very impressed with the Giants this year. They're a Gerald wait and see for me.
They are absolutely 100% a Gerald wait and see. Impressive. Gerald wait and see. And you know what I loved about it was I like this kind of next generation of players. Like, you know, Walker and dudes like that, they're all very entertaining footballers to watch. You're like, oh, these guys will be cool to watch for like years. And I feel like that club's got a vibe. Like, I think that lockdown was really good for them, having to be on the road for all that time. It felt like it really bonded them. Like, it was a good season for GWS.
And it's good for Leon Cameron as well, because I think there's two things that came out of that Making Their Mark documentary. Mm. One was like, oh, Steve Cornelio as a captain, you know, from the very first episode where he brings out that little totem, you know, his three-headed totem about this is the past, this is the present, this is the future. I'm like, oh, this guy.
You know what they're going to call that? It'll be the Cornelio curse. Yeah. It'll be the totem and it'll become to define the Giants.
But also Leon Cameron's this old school coach who every second word's fuck this and fuck that. I'm like, oh, man, compare him to like a Bevo or a Dimmer, and it's like, I don't know. He seems maybe a bit too old-fashioned, but I think I was wrong. I am happy to admit that I think he's got more tricks up his sleeves, and he's obviously a good motivator of men. If Toby Green could just stop shoving fucking umpires and stuff next year, that'd be great. All right, moving on. The next team, we go to their crosstown rivals, the Sydney Swans. Fantastic year, really. Won four out of their last five games. They won 15 games in total, 17 losses. Another one that we didn't even, well, I did not put in the top eight. I can't remember did or not.
I don't think so.
I think we all knew last year that they were building towards something. I just don't think we knew that they were going to build so quickly. Surprisingly, I thought they were going to go further in the finals, but they've got a lot to look forward to.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Like, I mean, I thought it was a great year for the Swans. I think, great bunch of, you know, new kids, like Buddy back playing good football, Papley just like entertaining. Like, I mean, one of those players you love to have on your team.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, as an opposition, yeah, absolutely hate. But like one of those players that you'd love to have on your team. And just like, you know, Parker had a great season. Like, there's a few people leaving, though. Dawson's going, right? And
Going back to the creek.
And who else? George Hewitt?
I don't know who that is. Is it related to Jake Lloyd?
The Sydney Swan story. Yeah, kind of. He's like another one of those guys.
The halfbacks or something like that. Yeah. It was funny. I was watching Jack Steele highlights this week in the lead up to the Brownlow. And one of the games where I think he got votes, there's a bit of play where Jake Lloyd is streaming out of the Swans back line, breaks one tackle, breaks two tackles, then gets a steal and gets tackled. And in my head, I'm like, yeah, fuck you, Jake Lloyd. Still don't know who you are.
Well, I am going to put a little picture of George Hewitt into our chat if I can work out how to do that. Chat. See if this works.
And they've got a lot. The exciting thing about the Swans is they seem to have that balance right between the veterans and the kids coming through. And if Buddy and Parker and Kennedy can stick around for like another year or two, you think that'll just be the perfect amount of time for these young guns who... The amazing thing about the Swans is they seem to have like younger versions in all the key posts, like in the midfield, in defense and attack. It's like, oh, they've done a really good job of cloning their veterans and getting like younger versions of them.
Yeah, it's basically like, you know, when the Wiggles recently just introduced a new generation of Wiggles. I feel like that's what the Swans have done.
Yeah, totally. And they just did that. They've done that Geelong thing where it's like, oh, yeah, we'll be bad for a year, but you know, we're going to be playing finals again. So
it's almost like the Swans look at their team like, you know, it's like your wardrobe, basically. And they're like, okay, those shoes are getting old. I'm going to need a new pair of shoes. I'll just get a new pair in and I'll start wearing them in. And then by the time my old shoes have to, like, you know, go, these new ones will be nicely worn in.
Do you think there's maybe, we're going to get to the Cats, but when you compare sort of Horse and Chris Scott, like Chris Scott's come under a lot of kind of scrutiny about having got the Cats to all these finals and prelims and stuff, but never winning. And then you look at Horse, and it's pretty much the same thing. Like, the Swans have probably played less finals than the Cats, but he doesn't have that reputation. And in the last 12 years, they've both won a grand final each. Why does Horse escape criticism?
I mean, I think that people see more of the future in the Sydney Swans. I think if the Sydney Swans were still doing what Geelong are doing, but it feels like, I think even if they fell away a bit this season, I think as a Swans fan you would have been like, oh no, I can see where they're going. We've got all these great new kids, let's give them some time. And they actually overperformed, I think, you know, based on that. So I think with Geelong, when you look at, okay, who's that next generation of guns at Geelong, that's where you're like, who is that? Who's their next, like, who's going to be their Danger or their Selwood or whatever from that next generation? And it's not really apparent, I don't think.
Who's going to be their next Reece Stanley? That's what we want to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you find a picture of George Hewitt?
Yeah, I did, but then I realized that I tried to do this last week and drop it into the message window, and for some reason I can't work out how to do that.
Did you hit send once you dropped it in?
Whatever has happened, I can't do it.
Moving on. The Brisbane Lions finished the year Sydney 15 wins, 7 losses, won 4 of their last 5 games. Got to start asking some questions about Brisbane now, don't you? 3 years in a row, 2 years that played a prelim in their home state. Is that right?
Yeah.
Prelim, yes. And they've cocked it up both times. Now, I don't like criticising Brisbane because I feel like that's criticising Chris Fagan. But you just start to wonder, don't you? Just a little bit of a whisper about why Brisbane can't win a big final.
Oh, I don't know. Is there? Like, really? I mean, they lost to the Bulldogs by a point and the Bulldogs are going to play in the grand final. They might win the grand final. Who knows? Like, it doesn't feel like Brisbane were that far away from it, right?
Yeah, it's an interesting one though, because you sort of feel like it's a bit like the Port Adelaide thing. Well, you remember Port, like that breakout year in 2014, and then it's like you get all excited and it's like, why can't they take that next step? And then other teams around them, like the Bulldogs coming from nowhere in 2016, like Richmond coming from nowhere, seem to just they don't have that nervous 90s thing where it's like, oh, we get to, you know, the edge of the diving board and we can't jump. But for Brisbane and Port and Geelong, you know, it's got to be set apart from last year. They just can't seem to bridge that gap.
Yeah, but like apart from last year when Geelong were like in front at halftime in the grand final. Like, I mean, we are so harsh on teams that do so fucking well and almost get there. And then we look at it like it's a disaster. We go full Kane twerp on Port Adelaide where you're like, well, Port Adelaide had a pretty good season. They got to the final four teams. They were clearly one of the final four teams. And then they did have a very bad night. And yes, you've got to ask some questions, but I don't know. Like, it didn't seem like an absolute disaster.
So you're giving him a Gerard wait and see?
I'm Brisbane.
Yeah, Gerard wait and see. Yeah.
Gerard wait and see. Yeah, absolutely.
No, I'm going to give him a good caning. And while we're talking about Brisbane, this was sent to the Two Guys One Cup Instagram account. We don't follow Charles Cameron on Instagram, which is at CharlesRanger23. But in classic Charles Cameron style, he's posted a screen capture of the tradie riots that were happening in Melbourne this week. And his commentary is, "This is sad."
Oh, it is sad. He's absolutely right. Just a man who just gets straight to the point.
Hashtag go storm. the next team we'll talk about is the Cats. We sort of have talked about them already. Pretty devastating loss to Melbourne in the prelim. Where are they at? I have 16 wins, 6 losses. That's a fucking standout year, really, when you think about it. Won 3 of their last 5 games. Lost the last one.
They are the team that you worry about don't look good enough. Like, you know, they don't look quick enough. Their game plan seems like a little out of date. Like, a whole bunch of assistant coaches are leaving. Like, there does feel like Steve Hocking's coming in. It feels like there's going to be a time of some sort of change at Geelong. But at the same time, you've still got Tom Hawkins and you've still got Dangerfield and you've still got Selwood. And you've got to think, well, while we've got these guys, do we still try to... I mean, Tom Stewart was such a big loss to them. Like, I don't think you can understate how big a loss he was to how that team plays football. So you put him back into the side next year. You replace Lockie Henderson with somebody who's sort of younger. You blood some of those, like, you know, guys who are on the fringes who, you know, may have potential to be that next generation of players. And you see if you can still have a run at the premiership with your absolute legends, your A-graders. I think they'll probably roll the dice and try again. I think maybe they'll roll the dice and try again and finish like fifth or sixth.
They've sort of got no choice, right? I mean, they've committed to this course of action of like, we don't bottom out. And it's, I mean, for them to start again, they would need to get draft picks in and all that kind of stuff. They can't do that. They can't afford it. They've got all these big veterans on huge salaries, unless, you know, their top 5 players all want to take huge pay cuts. But I can't see that happening. And also, it feels like Joel Selwood had a very angry year, didn't it? Like, it felt like Joel Selwood. And I don't know how he got away with some of the stuff he got away with. Him and Trent Cotchin this year just were like, fuck it. We're just going to start swinging elbows and sticking fingers where they shouldn't go.
It's interesting, isn't it, with the two of them? Because obviously, like, they're both just incredible leaders and they'll do anything for their teams. And as you get older and slower and less skillful and capable physically, you probably make up with, like, by a bit of, you know, gamesmanship that sometimes crosses the fucking line into eye gouging or something, you know. But Cotchin stepped aside from the leadership. Like, do you think there's value in, like,
Joel Selwood
stepping aside at Geelong, or is he just such a natural leader that, like, why would you change?
I think he's a natural leader. I mean, I think there is an advantage, but you wouldn't want to give it to like a Danger or a Guthrie or one of their other senior guys. What you want to do is give it to like a 24-year-old, you know, who's going to step up and you know, take the club into their next phase. But I don't know who that player is. I mean, maybe Cats fans probably know better than us, but I there's no obvious candidate to it from an outsider's point of view, I don't think.
I mean, Jeremy Cameron and those guys are still all very good footballers, but it just feels like there's like a few of their guys that are now in the last couple of years. If you're not going to do it next year or the year after, you then do have to genuinely clear people out.
Yeah, get rid of them. Get rid of the dead wood, Will. And then the last team to discuss is, of course, Port Adelaide. 17 wins, 5 losses. They won their last 5 straight. They went into the final series, Will, with a head of steam, smashed Geelong, and then we all know what happened after that. Now, Kane gave him a caning. Do you want to give him a caning, or are you going to give him a Gerald Wait and See?
Gerald Wait and See. I think that they had a bad night, but they were a good team. And you know, Charlie, if there's one thing that you can say about me, it's I believe in Port Adelaide, and I still believe in Port Adelaide.
I wonder if there's Port fans who listen to this, and that just grinds their gears. That, like, that sounds patronising, you saying that.
I mean, I must admit, I went on Chris Dittmar, who is obviously a very identifiable Port Adelaide supporter in Adelaide, his radio show today, but it was a fill-in. So it was Andrew Jarman, Bernie Vince, and Greg Blewett were hosting it, and I did tell Dits that I did yell "suck that," sucked in at him a lot. So I must admit, really? I was not. Yeah, I was just kept going "sucked in."
Sucked in. All right, that is our season review to this point. To all the teams who got Gerald Wait and Sees, good luck to you. To all those who got a caning, bad luck to you. Now moving on. Yes, well, it's time for the final pocket profile of 2021. We had a listener send in two options, one for Christian Petrarca and one for Aaron Norton. I thought, because you are a Bulldog supporter and it is the last of the year, let's do an Aaron Norton. How well do you think you know Aaron Norton?
Haven't heard a lot about Aaron Norton this week. I mean, I've heard obviously a lot of footy commentators talk about how important he'll be to the game, but no, I would say that at this stage, unfamiliar with Aaron Norton. Looking forward to finding out about him.
Okay. All right. So let's start with his nickname. And let me just say, I've never heard anyone use this in commentary or colloquially or anything like that. This was a surprise to me, but it is derived from his surname.
Okay. So it's not the astronaut, which is what people call him.
It is not that.
No. But from his name, from Norton, not
Norton.
From, yeah, okay. Yep. So, Norty.
Correct.
Stop there. I was going to be like, Norty, Naughty by Nature, Nature Documentaries, David Attenborough.
Why isn't everyone calling him Naughty? It's so obvious. And yet I have not heard any commentators use this phrase, Naughty. I mean, Naughty. You would have thought BT would have been all over this.
No, he's the astronaut in the commentary.
As a kid, what did you want to be?
An astronaut.
An astronaut. Now he's fucking with us. I reckon he's just getting meta. All right, this is a bit more difficult. What team did you follow as a kid? It's a Melbourne team, one of the big four.
Essendon.
No.
Collingwood.
Collingwood. I reckon he looks like he could have played for Collingwood in the 80s with that haircut.
You know, the only reason that I hesitated on Collingwood is that I spent a lot of time with Eddie Maguire, and he had an encyclopedic knowledge of every good AFL player who barracked for Collingwood as a kid. And
oh, really?
Every time anyone would be mentioned, he'd be like, you know, he's a Collingwood supporter. And he always had this like secret list of, we're going to lure them to the club because they used to barrack for Collingwood. And he never brought up Aaron Norton. So
the system broke down.
Interesting.
Who is the best player you've played with?
So a teammate, or so someone he's played alongside, Marcus Bontempelli.
Well, the great thing about this answer is he answers the Bont, and then in brackets, Marcus Bontempelli. By the way, this pocket profile is in the grand final footy record. We all know who Marcus Bontempelli is. Oh, sorry, we should take a point. I said, let's talk about Ollie Wines. Rewind a little bit. Brownlow, Ollie Wines, very worthy winner. But what a head. I don't think we've ever discussed how big and wide Ollie Wines' head is. Like, when they went to put the medal around his neck, I'm like, oh, how are they going to do this?
Yeah.
I hope they put an extra large sash to get around that noggin.
Yeah, it actually felt like they had to loosen it at the back like a cat's collar. Like, it was it was less a Brownlow medal and it was more a choker around his giant head.
Did you feel bad for Bont at all? He got so close, just one three vote game away from being a Brownlow medalist.
I mean, I hope that Marcus Bontempelli at some stage in his life gets to say that he is a Brownlow medalist. But as a bottom boy and with our mind on a bigger picture this week, I must admit that there was a part of me that if you want to like spin that narrative in your head of like, here's what's going to happen on grand final day, I've been very keen on the idea that Bont hasn't played like a, like, you know how he was playing middle of the season, just that he was like miles above almost anyone in the competition. I think if the Bulldogs are going to win on Saturday, Bont has to have that Dusty Martin game. And yeah. I think he's primed for it. He's been warming back up into it. You know, he's got over the injury now. He's had that week off to get ready for the grand final. He's like captain on the day. And he came second in the Brownlow medal. And the best way to like not care about coming second in the Brownlow medal is like winning the Norman Smith medal and holding up the Premiership Cup on grand final day. I liked it. I felt like if he wins the Brownlow, that's like a bad sign for the weekend.
Yeah, that's not a Bevo's bottom boy. A Bevo's bottom boy doesn't win the Brownlow.
Exactly.
Who's his most admired opponent? Collingwood player.
A Collingwood player?
They would be directly Darcy opposed. Moore. No, plays in the same area as Darcy Moore. Has a pretty bogan sounding first and last name, it's got to be said.
Braden Maynard.
Don't you reckon? That's pretty bogan. Braden 100%. Braden Maynard. Braden Maynard. Okay. He's probably very well spoken. He probably went to a private school. Most of them do. Who is your all-time favourite player? Interesting. Not a Collingwood player. Someone that I enjoyed the work of through the early 2000s.
Nick Riewoldt.
No. Oh. Played in half of the Riewoldt era. Played in the first half of the Riewoldt era. A real cult hero.
Nicky Winmar.
No. Nicky Winmar and Nick Riewoldt never played in the same team.
Did they not? Like, no. This is how old I am now, that it all just kind of blurs together. Blurs. I imagine there was like 2 or 3 years where Nicky and Nicky played together. But I guess now in retrospect,
Nicky Winmar went to the Bulldogs like 3 years before Nick Riewoldt was even drafted.
Yeah. I got to be honest with you. There was an earthquake in Melbourne this morning and it feels like it happened 3 years ago. So I don't know what time is anymore.
This man is something of a locomotive.
A locomotive? The G-Train.
Fraser Garrick. First player you would choose in fantasy football? This guy, he's an accumulator. One of the accumulators in the league.
At the Bulldogs?
No.
Oh, so not Jackson McRae. Tom Mitchell.
Tom Mitchell. Who is your favorite AFLW player? Ellie Blackburn?
Oh, yeah.
Who would you like to see as the halftime entertainment? Oh, God. This is where I feel a million years old because I have to literally Google who this person is. Hang on one sec.
Okay.
So this...
Interesting.
He's a rapper, an American rapper. You won't find him at Woolworths.
Someone Cole.
Yeah. J. Cole.
J. Cole.
Oh, that is the most dad thing to say.
You know, you're young versus me. The rapper, Colin Carpenter, J. Colin Carpenter.
If you weren't a footballer, what would you be? And this just sounds like a joke answer. So he names another sport that is barely a sport. I don't think it's in the
elite. A professional darts player?
Or 100%. I get the sense that you and Nortz are on the same page. You haven't got like 100% strike rate, but you know what? You are like Josh Bruce. You're working in tandem. Occasionally you get in his way. Occasionally you kind of like run back and fuck up his runner. But I think more often than not, you're simpatico. It's good. Okay. This is a good answer. A talent you wish you had. And it sounds like someone's been hanging out with Jason Johannesson.
So it's something to do with fashion,
no,
I imagine.
What was Jason Johannesson's other interest? Clearly, this is a joke that's going around the locker room with the Bulldogs.
Wasn't he into...
We created a meme about it. There was a meme that was on our Instagram.
Oh, Stonks.
Stonks. He wants to be able to predict Stonks.
Oh.
It strikes me that this is a joke amongst the boys. Stonks. He wants to be able to predict Stonks. All right. Continuing with the bloody zillennial bloody lingo, this kid, describe yourself in one word. I mean, ironically, this is a young person's word to us, but I think to him, it's kind of like a kind of outdated word. But it's online language to describe someone who's kind of like a rookie.
A noob.
Well done. Well done. This is like, there must be people who were born like after 1995 listening to this guy. This is fucking unbearable hearing these two talk about the stumps and
two
noobs J. Cole
sitting around talking about noobs.
What did you learn about yourself during COVID lockdowns? Okay. This is a pretty common cliche about life. You know, sometimes you just want to enjoy
some peace and quiet.
The simple things.
Okay. Close, but no cigar.
The biggest thing you missed during Hub Life?
His pets, some sort of pet.
Oh, you started to make the sound.
Family.
His family. You missed his family.
Damn, that was what I should have trusted my instincts.
Okay, bit of a joke answer here, I'm assuming. Unless he actually went to a performing arts school, what was his best subject?
Okay, unless he went to a...
Performing arts high school.
Performing arts high school. So what do you do? Juggling?
Think more like, fame academy.
Okay, ballet?
Dance. His best subject was dance. Do you reckon that's true? I mean, he's very light on his feet. I could see him being a Twinkle Toes.
I think that, absolutely. I mean, I think his dance moves would be big. He'd be one of those guys. Like,
he could do that leap at the end of Dirty Dancing. He needs someone to catch him.
That was his end of season meeting with Bevo last season. He actually recreated the scene from Flashdance.
Bevo's like, just meet me at a lake. I'm going to catch you by the hips. What's the most enjoyable thing about Hub Life? It's a very common Australian pastime. Well, not just Australian, but a lot of Australians do it. It's done in many warm countries. Up in Queensland, you're more likely to do this.
Yeah, going to the beach, surfing,
what do you
swimming.
Do? Surfing. What is the least enjoyable thing about Hub Life? It's a bit of observational comedy, I think, from Nauts here, from Naughty. All right. I'm going to have to give you a clue that would be Will. I'm finding this inane banter a little up and down. Oh, sorry, it's the worst clue I've done. I mean, I'm glad that we finished 2021 with the worst. This cryptic clue. He hates elevator chat.
Oh my God. That does not fit the criteria of a clue that makes good sense after you hear the answer.
I couldn't think of what to say. Oh, who is the biggest pest during Hub Life?
Interesting. I don't really know who the biggest pest at the Bulldogs might be. Is it another big forward? Is it some sort of like one of his?
I don't think so. I believe he's a defender. I think he's a father son, but not a father son of a Bulldog. His father played for the Hawks.
Oh, okay. I
think his father did.
Yeah. All right. Did he also play for the Hawks?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so. I can't really let me think if I can come up with another amazing clue. It's Billy Gowers.
Okay.
Is he Andy Gower's son?
I don't know. I don't know where Billy Gowers is these days.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, he's not playing in our back line in the grand final, is what I'm saying. You know.
He's just in the twos. Okay, so why was Billy Gowers the biggest pest during Hub life?
And
it's kind of an insensitive comment to people who suffer from serious mental illnesses.
He has Tourette's.
He's got 10 personalities.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe he does have 10.
Like dissociative disorder or something.
Yeah. I mean, okay. You know what? Be yourself. That's the way of Bevo's Bottom Boys.
Who's the funniest teammate during Hub Life? I have no idea who this guy is, but let's hope he's not related to a certain disgraced Australian politician who's just been relegated to the backbench.
Christensen. Someone Christensen.
No, close. No, what's Christian? That Christian.
Oh, George. Someone George.
No.
No.
What? Porter?
Oh, Christian Porter.
No,
okay,
no,
sorry.
Not Christian Porter, the politician. Who's the bulldog? No.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I just understand your clue now. Sorry, I wasn't looking in my answer.
Okay, right.
Someone Porter.
You were just padding, weren't you? Callum Porter, why is he so funny?
I don't know. Why is he so funny?
He's an elite storyteller. Elite.
Oh, elite. That's, I mean, isn't it good that everybody at the club is elite in some way?
What makes you laugh?
Carl Miller.
No. This is a bit of a, who the fuck were we just talking about? Place with the power, former captain, Treadray. Warren Treadray might say this. What makes you laugh?
The government, politics,
the media.
The media.
What's the first place you want to visit after restrictions lifted, travel restrictions lifted?
In Australia?
I'm assuming so, yeah. He described it as God's country, but it's not the Shire. So I'm a bit confused.
It might be where he's from. Is he going back to where he's from?
That's maybe. It is in Perth, Western Australia. Is he from WA?
He's from WA, I believe.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah, must be where he's from then. Yeah, it's from where he's... I'm going to say it's where he's from. Do you know what it's called?
No.
Okay. If pigs formed a band...
Oh, yeah?
And they were the best rock band in the world, they might be called this.
Big Pig Bay.
Rockingham. What's the favourite sporting event you would like to attend?
One of the regulars.
One of the regs.
I'm going to say Super Bowl.
Super Bowl would be correct. What's the last TV series you binged? This is also one of those shows. What's the word? It seems to be on all the time on streaming. It feels like it's on every streaming service. It's one of those shows, hugely popular and funny sitcom.
Seinfeld.
The Office. I assume he's talking about the American one.
Yeah, probably.
Favorite team or sports person outside of football? Oh, for fucking sake, who is this guy? Give me one sec. Okay, this guy, his surname is a powerful aquatic creature. Do you know who I'm talking about?
And Jerry Whale.
Willem Powerfish?
No.
Do you know who that is?
Absolutely not.
He's actually he's a fisherman. Hang on. Oh. Sorry. I just put into Google and the searches that came up is Willem Powerfish real? Internet sensation, whose real name is Willem Ungerman, posted a video allegedly showing himself reversing a Ford Falcon off the Fingal Road boat ramp into the Tweed River in the north of New South Wales. Right, okay, so this is the thing, millennials, mate, or zillennials. Oh, we're not going to know who bloody William Powerfish is. All right. Three famous people you'd like to meet.
LeBron James.
LeBron James. Like, I think LeBron James is the Carl Barron of dinner guests. One person he's already named. An American?
Johnny Powerfish.
J. Cole. Johnny Powerfish is Australian, I believe. And then who's Brody Moss? Who's Brody Moss?
Brody Moss.
I'm not even going to look it up. It's probably some fucking YouTuber or something. I don't care. He's pissing me off now. It's making me feel really old.
Is it Brody with a Y or an IE?
IE.
Brody Moss. I need to know now. All right. Brody Moss is a popular Australian YouTuber.
Is he really?
Yeah. Okay. Brody Moss is a popular Australian YouTuber, TikTok star, and social media personality.
I hate this pocket profile.
Brody Moss runs a YouTube channel under the name YBS Youngbloods, where he has collected nearly 2 million subscribers.
Oh, my God. And here we are doing our fake radio show. what's the best sporting event he's ever seen? So he names a cricket event, specifically a specific cricketer's hat trick.
Shane Warne's hat trick.
No. Too young.
Who has recently taken a hat trick?
I don't know if it's recent, but his surname rhymes with Piddle.
Oh, Peter Siddle hat trick.
When was that?
Don't know.
If you won $10 million, what would you buy first? Don't answer, mate. Just don't answer.
Give us a clue.
Well, you could probably buy about
a house.
A car.
Yeah.
Buy like 100 of these. What was his first car? Just give me the model. The make, sorry. It's
one of the
Japanese ones, I believe. Yeah. Japanese or Korean.
Okay, so Daihatsu.
No, but in that, you're in the right realm.
Suzuki
Vitara. What's his usual coffee order? It's a bit of a trick answer.
He doesn't drink coffee.
Doesn't drink coffee. And dream place you'd like to live. What is one of WA's most picturesque holiday destinations?
Broome. Margaret River.
Margaret River. And that is Naughty by Nature. Thank you for making me feel a million years old.
That is the major takeout from this is there'd be, if I was talking to him at a party, there'd be a few things that would be absolutely on the same page as. And then he'd start talking about Stonks and J. Cole and I'd be like, oh, I'm out of my depth.
Yeah, I occasionally follow my nieces and nephews on social media, and I occasionally will dip into one of their posts and read their comments underneath, their friends' comments, and I get scared because I'm like, I have no idea what they're talking about. Are they planning something here? Because I don't recognize who they're referring to, what this slang means. Are they angry? Are they happy? What is going on? We're almost at the end of the show. We're just going to dip into the mailbag for one last time. Yes. But before we do that, we're going to promote a few things. One is our live post-grand final show happening this Sunday, 4 p.m. on Zoom. There will be a link in the episode description below. It's going to be me and Will and the guys from Junk Time and some very special guests, Broden Kelly, Chaz Lucidello, and Titus O'Reilly has confirmed. So we have two Bulldogs and two Melbourne Demons supporters being represented. It'll be joy for one group and agony for another. Well, hope not agony, but at least some gentle, good-natured ribbing.
Here's what I will say is I hope the Bulldogs win, obviously, for my sake, but I also hope the Bulldogs win for the sake of that's the funny Titus O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I mean, if we have Titus, Titus will be great if the D's win, but I think Titus won't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
Like, he'll be experiencing something he's never experienced in his life, and he'll be joy. Like, how do I actually get comedy out of joy? But if they lose, oh my God, it's going to be amazing.
And tomorrow afternoon on Instagram Live at Two Guys One Cup AFL on Instagram, Will and I will be giving our final video tips. We'll have to pad it out a fair bit because, I think you all know who Will's going to tip, and I'm probably going to tip the Bulldogs as well, but, we'll find some other stuff to do. What is the other thing I need to promote? Question Everything. Will has a show, Question Everything, on the ABC, 8:30 on a Wednesday. Who was on this week?
ABC iView as well. And it was a really funny show. So Tom Cashman, who's been on previously, who was really hilarious. Mark Humphreys, who's absolutely great as well. And this young performer called Beck Melrose, who is actually been just writing on our show. Like, we had a little intern position for a writer on the show, and she came in and she worked on the show, and we've just loved her so much. She's been so good in rehearsal when, you know, our team fill in for the panelists, you know, when we're rehearsing the show, that we gave her an opportunity on the show, and she absolutely fucking nailed it. So it's really cool. So you should check that out.
Right. Let's open up the mailbag. This is from Peter. He says, Stephen Martin for the Norm Smith to make it 3 Martin Norm Smiths in a row. Can you see Steph Martin winning a Norm Smith?
Well, I mean, if he managed to play a game that completely nullified, you know, the major difference between the teams, because I think that's why everyone's back in the Demons, is they think that Max Gawn, you know, he's going to win the ruck. If Martin managed to negate Max Gawn after the game that Gawn played last time, then yeah, absolutely, he could win the Norm Smith.
I did a bit of trolling when I put the message out for getting questions and comments, because there's a lot of talk around the grand final being referred to as the big dance, and a lot of people hate it. Scott Dooley in particular. Lemo has jumped in the comments to say he also hates the big dance. How do you feel about the big dance?
Well, you know what? I love the big dance.
Because, me too.
Yeah. Firstly, I love the feel of the big dance. I love how mad it makes some people, the big dance. And here's the other thing. The other reason that I did not know that I love the big dance, but I now do. You know who loves dancing?
Aaron Norton.
Bloody
mate.
Naughty. Aaron Norton. And he's going to be out there on Perth's biggest dance floor on Saturday night.
Mitty wants to know, how responsible are we holding Hawthorn for the overuse of horses these days? Will the AFL ban them for bringing the game into disrepute? It has been appropriated, unfortunately.
Retrospectively. That's what they should do. They should ban Hawthorn retrospectively because horses was used at some dodgy protests.
Could it be like Southern Cross tattoos, where what was once kind of the symbol of unity is now like, oh my God, don't use that.
I mean, wouldn't it be great if like horses got milkshake ducked? That's what I love, because it's become such an iconic. And then poor old Daryl, who's been sitting around riding high, being invited to rock festivals and the Melbourne Cup and stuff to sing horses, and then suddenly he can't get any work.
A right wing attack on the union buildings. Aaron wants to know, is in Will's efforts to consume any and all Bulldogs content, has he listened to Cody Waitman on Dylan Friends from the other day? He seems like a top kid.
I haven't yet. I should do that.
Tony says, are they taking a piece of the MCG to Perth Stadium for the grand final this year? And if Perth Stadium and the Gabba ever met, what powers will the joining of these pieces deliver? Oh, so you think it's something like Infinity Stones?
Oh, yeah. They have to separate them. This is how powerful the MCG is. They have to take pieces of it and bury it in different places.
Tim wants to know, what is the most embarrassing way for a top four team to bow out of the finals? Brisbane in straight sets, Geelong, the emotional loss-win-loss roller coaster, or Port, win-loss, 2 weeks of hope and then expectation for nothing? The most embarrassing, I think Port Adelaide is the most embarrassing just because of what they had going for them. The other ones, you can sort of say, well, you know, they, whatever, for whatever reason, but the Ports was just humiliating. I mean, it got Kane Corns fired up. JD wants to know, with a COVID scare in Perth today, what do you think could make the grand final more entertaining if played without crowds?
I think they're going to have a crowd. I don't think that I think they seem reasonably confident that it's not too much of a scare. You get this close to the grand final, just stop. Shut the border. Stop the trucks, you know? We're close. Like, I know that people need shit, but just for a couple of fucking days, let's stop the trucks coming in.
Giant Davey wants to know, how would you change the Brownlee medal to make it less fixated on midfielders? My idea is to add a Defenders Award as a reverse Coleman. And then a cheeky fellow has chimed in by saying, if defenders were better footballers, wouldn't they be playing in the midfield?
Yeah. Well, I think that is part of the problem. The best players all play in the midfield, and that's how the game is played. But I think there should be a best defender award. I absolutely agree with that.
I mean, it'd be nice in honour of Danny Frawley if they named it after him, wouldn't it?
I mean, yeah, absolutely. The Danny Frawley Defender of the Year.
Taco wants to know, with all the talk of the failure of the Gold Coast and a new team in Tassie, what do you think of the idea of a game between the Gold Coast and all the ex-Gold Coast players in the league? And if Gold Coast lose, they have to move to Tassie. I don't understand. What's the link to the ex-Gold Coast players?
That doesn't seem to make any sense. I can absolutely see Tony Cochran pitching that to the AFL. Okay, Gil, this is my last minute deal. We play against all our ex-players.
Joe Brada wants to know, Will, are you going to allegedly have an edible for the grand final?
Yes, I've restocked ready for Saturday.
Is that more for like a nerves thing or just kind of like a hip pain thing?
I mean, I don't know. Who knows anymore?
Ian, who's in the UK, wants to know, a 10:30 a.m. start time, is that too early to have some beers while watching? No, I don't think so. It's a special occasion.
Absolutely not.
It's like Christmas Day. You can drink anytime you want on Christmas Day. Grand Final Day is the best day of the year. Get started early. I actually, because I'm in Brisbane, I put a question out on Twitter today asking where I should go with a couple of specific requirements. I want it to be like a genuine AFL. I know that's probably going to be a very few of those places in Brisbane, but I want to go where people are actually there to watch the game and not going to talk, including my wife and her friends. And also I want a beer garden so I can sort of soak up some atmosphere. Burning Clock says, given how much the AFL and the teams make for merchandise, who is the bigger windfall for the AFL if they win? And what was the most profitable grand final of all time? In second thought, this might be a question for Sir Swamp Thing. Yeah,
I was going to say, not really our area, I would say. But I know they sold a lot of those yellow Richmond jumpers when they had to play in the yellow jumper.
It is just such a shame. Like, it is still COVID and stuff. Because I would out of our own pocket, have paid to print up 500 Bevo's Bottom Boys t-shirts and send someone down to the MCG to flog them out of a suitcase to see how many we could have sold.
Oh, mate, we would have sold all 500, no doubt.
April wants to know, what uniquely Perth thing should be included in the grand final halftime entertainment? Basil Zemkis comes out and does a massive line of coke.
And they're like, this cocaine was actually brought here from the inner city of Melbourne for this day.
Graham says, my question is, can Dools unblock me, please?
Unblock him.
We have no, don't unblock him. Is Ollie Wines, short with a massive head, the inverse of Joe Danaher, tall with a pinhead?
Yes.
And Lord Zabba wants to know, what kind of chorizo pasta are you having before the game? Any suggested recipes? I don't eat chorizo pasta and I have no recipes. That is Two Guys One Cup for 2021. Remember our tips on Instagram at Two Guys One Cup AFL.
And Sunday, day after the grand final, just make sure you tune in. It'll be entertaining either way. I'll either be very happy or very sad.
And play on, not 15.
Ball. We are Two Guys, One Cup.